today on Movie Wallahs, Get Hard, Danny Collins. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And just to be clear, that introduction was not a sentence. It was the name of our two movies of the week, Get Hard and Danny Collins. Not often we can do that. We can just read out names of movies to make a coherent sentence. We should try and play that game.
We should.
Yes.
And I think the movie Danny Collins could have been called Get Hard, Danny Collins.
Yeah, it could have actually.
That would actually
that
work.
That would have been funny, worked. Yeah.
Movie title mashup.
Yeah. Yes.
Should do that. So we've been watching Transparent.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Do you have Amazon Prime?
I do have Amazon Prime, but I'm too scared to watch it. I've watched a couple series on Netflix, though.
Oh,
but yeah, but talk, yeah, let's talk yeah. about no, Transparent no, first.
Well, we've been long-time advocates of Netflix and Amazon Prime, because I'm an Apple geek, doesn't play nicely with our Apple TV. So we tend to watch most things on Netflix just because of ease of convenience. But Amazon's coming out with some original content. And
yeah.
Transparent intrigued us, I think, a few weeks ago when it picked up a Globe for, I can't remember what it was for. Best overall series?
I think so. Jeffrey Tambor
picked up the best actor as well.
It was a major award. So, I pricked my ears up and I had seen the ads on Amazon. I'm a long-time Prime subscriber. But for Nada, they throw that in pretty nicely. And, we're about four or five episodes in now, Rashmi.
What I like about the Amazon model is that, unlike, say, the Netflix model, where they just plonk 13 episodes off the series, at least when Amazon first released their original content, they put like six or seven series online and only like three or four episodes of each.
Ah.
And then depending on the number of, downloads and interest, it kind of dropped a few of them and it kind of let the other ones continue.
That's interesting.
So it kind of almost let, viewer, it's kind of an evolution, like the survival of the fittest, the ones which got the most interest, the most downloads were the ones which they gave more funding for. So that's an interesting model. Yeah,
it's a kind of a blend of the traditional TV pilot type model, where you get a few episodes before your series gets canned, and no one wants to invest in the entire series. I mean, I philosophically, I dislike that. I think I much prefer the Netflix model. And if you've ever heard Kevin Spacey talk about House of Cards and how that came to pass. But he there's a great speech, actually. If you go on YouTube and type in Kevin Spacey talks about the TV industry, he has this huge rant about the way that pilots are actually more expensive for networks to produce, because what they do is they produce a bunch of pilots, many, many more than are actually screened. Only some of them actually make it to TV, and then only a few of them get renewed. Yeah. And when you look at the cost of all these pilots that are made and never shown versus investing in, quality television like House of Cards, where they had Fincher on board, they had Spacey on board, and still they couldn't get this thing funded because everyone wanted to do a pilot and then see whether or not people like the characters. And they had this vision for a two-season or three-season show where you have character development that takes a while. You can't introduce characters like his House of Cards character in an episode and hope that everyone gets it. It takes, several episodes to develop that. So I like the Netflix model more than I like this Amazon.
I'm wondering, Joe, I mean, we watched House of Cards and we binge-watched the first season, and I wonder if we hadn't known that the whole season was there and that there was going to be this evolution over two seasons, that we would have stuck with it if we just watched the pilot.
Mm. Plus, I think there is, the way we live right now, I think there is something inherently more appealing with binge watching, because nobody has the time to sit down every Thursday, or even if you're recording your stuff, I find it impossible to find time to catch up on all the shows which have accumulated. I will occasionally find a few hours one weekend you know, when I'm like, okay, I have 3 hours before I have to go for dinner or whatever, right. What can I watch? And it's just perfect for binge watching.
Yeah.
I mean, I have such an addictive personality that I'm almost afraid to start any of these because then I'll keep watching till 2 in the night and then I won't go to bed and won't be able to get to work on time. And God knows I don't at the best of times. So, no, it was great. I mean, you guys know that I love 30 Rock.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tina Fey and the other guy who were writers on 30 Rock have done another show on Netflix.
Oh, really? Called
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And it's 20-minute episodes. There's only 10 of them. I was done in like an afternoon. It was great. It was like...
Really?
It was perfect. So, I there's something to be said for that.
I think I've been delving into Parks and Recreation, which I love.
Oh, yeah.
And watching it from the beginning. So that's what I've been doing. I was actually sick and managed to get through about, you know, 5 or 6 of those episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, binge watching is the way to go. I mean, I haven't watched television in the traditional, you know, oh my word, it's 8 o'clock, I need to sit down and watch my show for years because we DVR
except one show,
which was
The Amazing Race.
But no, even that I time shifted, right?
I know, I mean, but yeah, it's the one that you really do look forward to.
It's my little guilty pleasure. I do like me some the Amazing Race. It's awesome.
Of all the things,
I know. I have a
general disapproval of anything reality based,
except
enter the hypocrisy when The Amazing Race starts.
Yeah.
There's all a reason why it wins the Emmy every year, every single year. Amazing.
I don't know. I have to watch it because I can't watch
2 or 3 episodes from the end of the race. You are so invested. There are people you hate. There are people you love. For me, I like the travel elements. I just love the fact that they travel around the world doing all this crazy stuff. And I think what always makes me smile is some of these people have never been outside the USA, and so they find themselves immersed in these environments, and their comments are hilarious.
And I think adversity always brings out the worst in people.
Exactly,
It's good to watch these people, you know, under pressure.
Unbeknownst to Rashmi, I've applied several times to appear on The Amazing Race, not been selected.
Thank God.
She seems to think it will end up in divorce.
I
personally believe it will bring us together.
No, but you need to do like... We couldn't get more together. You need to do something like... You need to be the first contestant who does it with their cat.
Yeah, exactly. That would be really funny.
You know, or there's something...
Be hilarious.
You need to do a pitch which they just cannot refuse.
Or you have to carry Yazdi on your shoulders. Yes, like that's your commitment. Yes,
yes. Something really,
that would be really funny.
Yes. We need a team name, the Crazy Wallas.
Yeah, or three-legged or something.
Yeah, make an offer they can't refuse.
Yeah, that's really funny, Yazdi, yeah.
All right, okay. Well, let's move along. 8 minutes into the show and there's not nary a mention of the two movies that we need to talk about. So we have Get Hard and we have Danny Collins. Where would you like to start?
Get Hard.
Okay, Get Hard.
Go for it.
So Ethan Coen, not to be confused with Ethan Cohen of the Coen Brothers fame.
I know, I thought it was a spelling mistake to start with.
Yeah, so Ethan Coen, C-O-H-E-N, not C-O-E-N. Who wrote the screenplay for Tropic Thunder, as well as Men in Black 3, makes his directorial debut with Get Hard. Ethan Coen co-wrote this film along with Jay Martell and Ian Roberts, and it stars Kevin Hart, as well as Will Ferrell. And the movie revolves around a billionaire who happens to get caught in the wrong way and has to go to jail, and he realizes that he will be prime for the picking when he is behind bars. And so he hires an African-American man to kind of harden him, to get him ready to face the prison system when he goes
to San Quentin of all places.
The movie has releases this Friday, and I actually watched the trailer for this movie and I was laughing my gut out while I was watching the trailer, so I was really looking forward to this one. What about you guys? What did you think about it?
Okay, so this felt like a loose version of a modern-day twist on Trading Places, and it was way more enjoyable than I expected. You know, Yasti, as you always say, it's no war and peace, and this is, of course, totally predictable from the first 5 minutes, but it's really funny, and it works really hard to make you laugh. And I found this movie really enjoyable, and it's a great decompress that earns its R rating. Mm-hmm.
Joe.
I'm horribly confused by this one. And the reason is it contains so many elements that are it offends everyone. I mean, it's racist, it stereotypes people, it's homophobic in the probably the worst way possible. And yet there was something endearing about Will Ferrell in the way that he delivered this movie, and Kevin Hart really brought some good laughs. So overall, I kind of come away not really knowing what to make of it. I find it incredibly hard to recommend because, honestly, I was offended by many of the positions it takes, many of the stereotypes it makes, many of the... And some, you know, this can be funny, and I like humor which pokes fun at everyone. I mean, you know, I'm the first person to embrace differences and in race and point out differences in the way people are and behave and stereotypes. But this movie is somehow offensive to me the way it goes about it. So I find myself oddly disturbed by the way it left me feeling.
So yes, I'm with I'm with Joe on this one. I mean, I watched most of the movie saying, okay, it's offensive, but, you know, I was trying to decide, you know, is it worthwhile? And I have nothing against offensive movies. I think just go all out, you know, just be as offensive as you need to be. I mean, this is the guy who wrote Tropic Thunder, which is, I think, one of the most offensive movies ever made. But I love Tropic Thunder. But as this movie went along, I literally felt ashamed for laughing. I felt ashamed that I was laughing at much of the movie because I'm like, why am I laughing at this? This is so wrong. And it really did offend me. I think it's vile. I really think this movie is vile. I mean,
I like wrong humor too.
But yeah, but it's just, it comes from such a mean space.
Yes.
It comes from a really mean space. And it really, at the end of the day, it's its place is in the mud. I mean, it really doesn't. It's not looking to say anything better about race relationships. It's not really looking. It has a really, really regressive attitude to everything. I mean, there's only two things in the movies. Okay, one is, you know, the straight male gay panic. Okay, a guy who is made to, you know, be very close with another guy or worse, have sex with him. And then the other, so the movie's obsessed with that. Half the movie is about that, right? Ridiculously. And I'm not saying you should be politically correct, but you shouldn't be obsessed about jokes about him getting raped in the prison and him having to suck. And enough, you know, I mean, it's funny the first time, but it was. And then the second thing, which I find even more offensive about the movie, is it's obsessed with the N-word. It's so obsessed with the N-word. It keeps, you know, for a white dude to write a script which is so obsessed about the N-word, and people misuse it and use it and misuse it over and over again. I don't know. I don't think I can abide by that. People shouldn't be watching this movie and thinking it's cool to make jokes about the N-word. On that, those grounds alone, I think the movie is dangerous.
Okay, I'm having a chappy moment here. But, you see, okay, look, now you're both going to jump down my throat. I feel bad comparing this movie to Crash because it's nothing like Crash. But I took it.
Yes.
This is going to be good.
Yeah, I took this to be almost a play on people's expectations on race and prejudice. And I actually respect it for doing that because there's too many movies where we kind of skirt around the issue. And I think this just said, you know what, fuck it. Let's just call people what they are. Let's call out the prejudices and let's laugh about them. Because if we don't do that, we're never going to get over it. So I actually think that it was being quite smart about the way that it offended you, and I'm shocked that it offended you both. Like, I'm shocked because I found this hilarious. I actually thought, I can't believe they're gonna go there. No, they're not. Oh my god, they went there. And I thought by going there it kind of puts the issue on the table.
And I think that's what they were going for. It's just they didn't achieve it. And I think the cliche, you know, some of the jokes even about, you know, the poverty in the school system and the way that this poor little girl has to go to this school where, you know, some of that stuff I've seen done before, and it's funny. It's a social commentary. You look at it and you're like, you know, there are these poor schools where the kids have to go through metal detectors, but they use it in such a cliche way that it's like, this is how many people who don't live in those situations see those situations. And
And by saying that, they're saying, aren't you stupid for thinking that way?
No, they're not saying that, though.
See, I took it as...
That's not what they're saying. And I think maybe that was the way it was intended on paper, but the way that this thing is cut together at the end of it is frankly racist. And I... Honestly, I'm really not sensitive to this stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. I make people uncomfortable at work all the time by using and making statements that that establish differences between race and can be perceived as offensive by some people and not others. But I do that all the time. I kind of get a kick out of it. This, on the other hand, gets too much of a kick out of it, and I think it crosses a line to bad taste, and really? I didn't like that.
I must have a much higher threshold or just be mean, because I just found it hilarious, and I did notice that at times I was laughing way beyond the rest of the theater. I was literally like, because Yasti was in the middle, right? So I was thinking, my God, at one point I nearly fell off my chair with laughter.
I laughed that one time. I forget what the joke was, but I felt terrible for laughing. I'm like, I'm a horrible human being for laughing at this.
Why?
You know? Because like Joe said, the movie is very racist. It's actually saying this is how people are.
Yeah.
And I don't think...
But that's how people are.
No, yes, we can be better than that. No. Yeah,
we can be better than that. But I think that there are many people like that.
No. See, this is the beauty of a movie like Crash. Totally different genre, totally different tone, but that takes the stereotypes and plays with them, and in a movie like Crash, when the cliche in Hollywood is to make the black guy be the good guy and him not to be a robber, whereas in Crash it does a kind of a double flip on you, right?
Right.
They speak as if they're okay. Statute of limitations on spoilers is way out of the way with Crash. So if you haven't seen it, see it. Turn this bit of the podcast off. But in Crash, the black guys talk like they're good. You expect them to be good, and then they turn out to be bad. And the racial stereotype about them, being bad guys is cleverly exploited and played with. This movie doesn't have that level of thinking behind the way it uses these jokes. It points at the fact that this is the social situation for these people, and we should laugh about that, and it's not funny.
No, I don't think it's saying that. I think there was another level of sophistication which was saying, this is the situation for these people.
Listen to yourself, Rashmi.
I will. This is the situation for these people. Oh, we're feeling all nervous about the fact that this is the situation about these people. But then it laughed about it. It said...
No, it laughed at them.
It was that.
Like,
there's this whole bit with the rapper T.I.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was unwatchable. Yeah. I felt like it's really pandering that 80s stereotype of the black hood. It's so outdated. We have a black president. We shouldn't be laughing at T.I. Pulling out a gun. And then there's this whole other bit, which I don't know is from some other movie, about them going to this white supremacist group. Oh my God, that's just, I can't even bring myself to talk about it. That was so wrong at so many levels.
But
is this an indictment?
No, but do you believe that's not going on in the world? Do you believe that that's not happening in the US?
It is, but by laughing at it, you're kind of legitimizing it, I think, instead of being critical of it.
But I think we're laughing at it because we're uncomfortable about it, right? We're actually saying... I'm laughing because I'm feeling really uncomfortable about this, because this is actually how I feel or how I think, or I know someone who is like this or thinks like this. So you can't just pretend it's not going on.
No, I totally acknowledge it's going on, but I think...
I think
the movie is showing it and saying, ha-ha, you're going to laugh about this.
A better example of this is the homophobia, which, to Yazdi's point... one or two jokes about, the straight guy in the, walks into a bathroom in the gay club and, has his back against the wall. Those kind of jokes can be effective as kind of one-off gags. But here it goes beyond that.
Let me just remind you of Unfinished Business and the scene in the bathroom where people have their penises hanging out of the door.
A scene in about... This is a recurrent theme throughout the movie from beginning to end about this character that is essentially homophobic. And because it's his story. It's from his perspective. It keeps going on the offensive. And I don't understand why that is funny.
But I don't believe that he was homophobic. I think he was just afraid of being raped in jail.
So let's talk about this. So people get raped in jail all the time, right? But to repeatedly make really childish jokes about it, how does it how is it helping the situation? You're laughing at something pretty horrific which happens all the time. Are you making people more aware that people get raped in prison? Not necessarily. I think it's a very cheap shot to again and again keep bringing up this prison rape thing. And it's relentless.
I agree with you. So I'm not going to disagree with you that it's relentless in its ability to keep bringing up the same joke. And I think it is overkill. But I think it's laughing at the fact that this man who has no awareness of the world other than this ridiculous, expensive billionaire world that he lives in is now going to have to face reality. That's how I kind of took it. Not necessarily that it's about being raped in prison, but it's basically saying this person who has no ability to survive in any reality other than the fake world he lives in is now going to be exposed to something he's not going to have a clue of what to do with.
And you can do that with a line of dialogue and be done with it. But to beat a dead horse over and over again.
Like the Jackass movies make a lot out of this gay panic, okay, with the straight male. I love those. I laugh my belly out with the Jackass movies. I love Tropic Thunder. I love, you know, Team America. I love, you know, South Park. Those are all very offensive movies. But there's something about this which kind of really disturbed me after a while.
So I guess, yes, you said that you laughed your head off basically when you watched the trailer. What was different in the trailer? What made you laugh in the trailer that didn't then pan out in the movie for you?
So for one thing, all the good jokes are in the trailer. So that, you know, that really bothers me nowadays. Because mm-hmm. if you've seen the trailer, you don't need to watch the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the trailer, it's the first time you're seeing it. And that's all. You get in, you do your joke, and you come out. But this movie just... I mean, after you've made the fourth or the fifth or the sixth joke about the N-word, just stop bringing it up. You know, it's just that relentlessness. It just seems puerile. It seems like you're spending your time with an 11-year-old and all the or maybe a 5-year-old, and all the 5-year-old wants to do is fart and do fart jokes all night long. After a while, you're like, enough with the fart jokes. You know, so I felt like that. Like I was with somebody like really immature who just is obsessed with these things and can't get past it.
Like when you say fart jokes, it makes me laugh.
Yeah, but for 3 hours.
Not for 3 hours.
Anyway, it's going to be one of those.
But I have to say, and you have to agree that Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart, I think they had great chemistry.
Yeah.
And I really thought they made it work for me. And I love that it, I mean, I love that it played with stereotype. And I love the soundtrack.
There was a soundtrack? Okay. Was it just me or they deliberately enhance the difference between their heights?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It seemed like Kevin Hart
was teeny.
Was on his knees, you know, when...
like they were in the Hobbit movie.
I think that they deliberately... They must have deliberately done it.
Maybe. I mean, I know Will Ferrell's actually a very tall guy, so yeah. I've never seen the two of them stand together to know. But it was a very odd perspective. Yeah.
Okay, let's wind this up. So let's start with Yazdi.
So I will absolutely grant that there are parts of this movie which are very, very funny. But I, like Joe, I kind of almost felt ashamed after the half an hour point to be laughing at this movie. So I think the movie is vile. It's relentlessly misguided and it's offensive. And if you're either a homophobe or a racist or stupid, you will like this movie. I think everybody else should give it a pass. So I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10.
Oh my God, Joe.
You know,
and I'm not talking about you, Rashmi. This is I wrote in my notes before you said anything.
You just called my wife a neo-Nazi yesterday.
No, this is in my notes. I wrote it when I came out.
It's funny.
Like I said at the beginning, I'm kind of confused because the movie does have some funny moments, and I think it's just poorly executed and ends up coming off tonally in a way that it wasn't I don't think it ever intended to be as offensive as it came across to me. Obviously, it throws PC out the window, and I love that.
Yeah.
Don't think for a second that I'm not a fan of these movies that throw caution to the wind as far as, you know, this oversensitive political correct culture that we have right now. But this movie is not being clever with it. It does offend, and I don't take offense lightly at this kind of thing, but I think my main fear is that people walk into this movie and see the kind of things as funny in a way that's inappropriate. And for that reason, I can't recommend this. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10. It really was just a really... I feel dirty having seen it, and I feel... Honestly, I think it's a movie that's wrong on every level.
Oh my God.
I know.
Like Rashmi and the Puritan was today. Yes. Like, oh my God, I feel like I'm in, you know...
Tie my buckle.
Yes. I adjust your curls.
I do think the movie is wrong at many
levels. Okay, you had your say.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. So
for me, you know, the silly jokes are the best, and there are plenty of them in this movie, as well as the racist neo-Nazi N-word homophobic ones. You know, I thought this was a good movie. I actually thought this was really, really funny, but clearly there's something... I don't know if there's something wrong with me. Maybe we should wrangle about this one.
We should wrangle.
This is a wrangle.
Is this an offensive
This is
movie
a wrangle, yeah.
Because everybody's going to see
it. And
yes,
you can
it.
Put your point of view down if I set the wrangle up.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But for me, this was as good as Horrible Bosses, the first one. For me, this is a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I'm surprised at my own reaction, if I'm honest.
I'm really shocked by both of you.
I'm especially surprised by me, because I don't normally feel this way about things, and I think for there was just, anyway, to avoid not repeating myself, I've already said my piece, but there was just something inherently wrong about its jokes.
You know, maybe this is a weird other movie to bring up in terms of comparison, but think of a movie like Nymphomaniac, which really goes there. It goes with race. It goes into, you know, sexuality. It goes into really uncomfortable territory. And granted, it's never meant to be a comedy, but I think it comes out with having said something about all of those issues, I think, personally. So I think there is a way to say this happens in real world, just because you don't want to acknowledge it. You know, it's not that it doesn't happen, but I think it's all in how you...
Yeah.
In how you implement it.
Yeah. The racism here is KKK approved. It's not, right? No, I mean, it really is. They could show it in one of their videos and everyone would be like, yeah, this is how it should be. And I think that's inherently why I feel uncomfortable about it. You know, I don't know that... No, I mean, seriously. I mean, I think that you could easily play this to a people who are, you know, absolutely racist and it absolutely support every statement that they have to make about the world. And that's the line it crosses for me.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, but I just didn't read it that way. I mean, to me, it just didn't...
It was not intended that way either.
Yeah, I just didn't read it that way. It didn't come across to me that way.
And I don't think Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart would sign their names up for something that was intended that way. But it came off that way, and that's a misfire, I think, from the direction.
Okay, people go see this, and please write into us.
Okay.
Moving on to movie number 2 of the week, which is Danny Collins.
Okay, so Danny Collins is an aging rock star who decides to change his life when he discovers a 40-year-old letter written to him by John Lennon. And this is, this actually happened. The film is loosely kind of based on this event that actually happened. But this is directed by Dan Fogelman and written by Dan Fogelman. And it stars Al Pacino, Annette Bening, Jennifer Garner, Bobby Cannavale, and the very adorable Giselle Eisenberg, amongst others. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, this movie had...
And we just saw it last night.
We did see it last night, so I haven't really had much time to kind of gather my thoughts and stew on it. But the bottom line is that, you know, this movie is reasonably effective. It's saved by a really nice performance by Al Pacino. I guess my biggest problem with it, and the reason I didn't walk away, you know, with a stronger emotion one way or the other about the movie, is that it doesn't, the characters don't seem to go anywhere. They all kind of just exist in this world, and you know, there's no big redemption moments. There's no you know, it's just a mediocre film, and I wish I could say more than that, but it just came off to me as average.
Yes, Dee.
I liked it a lot for all the reasons that you didn't. I think there are 100 movies which have been made about redemption, about somebody who finally in the last chapter of their life realized that all the wrongs they've done, and they make one last ditch attempt to go and correct all of them and, you know, try to seek redemption. And that's tired. It's exhausting. We've been through this path a long time before. I mean, honestly, like 10 minutes into the movie, you will know exactly how this film's going to end and what's going to play out and what's going to happen. But I think it's again, not what a movie is about, as Roger Ebert like to say, but it is how it is about what it is about. And I really liked how this movie is about what it is. And I'm not the world's biggest fan of Al Pacino. I don't think he's very good in this movie, but in spite of all that, I enjoyed this movie thoroughly, and I think the movie is entirely lifted by the cast here. I think the cast are just, I mean, this is what good actors will take potentially mediocre material. And I don't think the writing is that mediocre. I actually liked a lot of the writing. It actually affected me emotionally a lot. But you know, see what some of these actors do with the lines they've given, and they just make it sing. So this is the definition of a crowd pleaser. It's not going to break any big, you know, barriers in terms of filmmaking or storytelling or character arcs or any of that. But in a way, you go to the movies to be moved, to have a fun time. And there's something very square about the movie, but I really liked it. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I would have predicted this as a total Yazdi movie.
Yeah.
I mean, first off, I think it has a really undesirable title. I really didn't want to watch it.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad I did, because I think it's sweet and it's unoffensive and it's really, really likable. And I think, like you said, it's nothing that we haven't seen before, but it's just pleasant, because I think even for the most part, when it's being so contrived, it's sweet and it's earnest and it's sincere and it has such a big heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really well acted. I mean, Plummer, Benning, Pacino, Cannavale, even Jennifer Garner, who I think is so typecast, does a little bit different here.
I couldn't help but draw comparisons to a movie that I like an awful lot. It's in our DVD collection, and it's another story of a has-been character, which is Mickey Rourke and the Wrestler.
Mm.
I don't know why, but this movie felt very reminiscent to me of that film. Mm. It's totally different, and you know, these characters are in different places in their life, but that kind of story of a has-been trying to make sense of the world around them and the life that they've led, you know, resonated with me very strongly in The Wrestler. Not so much here, because I think perhaps the decision to have, you know, made him a successful person made me very unsympathetic to him and his, you know, rich people problems. You know, I think that was ultimately the part of the movie that I couldn't relate to. I was like, well, I don't know why there's anything for you to kind of, you know, struggle with. Okay, so maybe your art isn't as good as you had hoped it would be, but, you know, that's okay. Go back to your $30 million mansion and you know, take it easy. I mean, that's what I would do.
But I think that's, in a way, the point of the movie, that you reach a point where the $30 million mansion is not enough, where it all seems fake and you have to kind of find out what it was about yourself.
See, I'd like to try and deal with that.
Yeah.
I would like to
deal with the $30 million mansion.
Yeah. I would like to try and experience that level of dissatisfaction with life.
But something else you said at the very start in your intro was that, you know, you didn't get some big redemption. And I think that's exactly why I like this movie. I think there was a way, especially in the last act, that the movie could have played out and it would have totally followed the expected path. But instead, it kind of is deft. It doesn't make a big deal about it. And I actually found the last scene in the movie just picture perfect. And I don't want to ruin it for everyone. But the movie could have been a lot more flashier, grander, cheaper even by pursuing that. And it kind of stepped away from that a little bit. And I appreciated that.
That worked well for me as well. I mean, I think ultimately, though, I was looking for a little bit more of a payoff, having, you know, sat through, you know, the hour and a half to 2 hours of running time. I was looking for, you know, just a bit more of a punch at the end, and not necessarily the cliche way, you know, the kind of everything is a bed of roses and everyone, you know, comes together and a big happy ending, happy families. I wasn't necessarily looking for that, but I was looking for some kind of an emotional reason to come out with a smile, and it wasn't enough for me the way it delivered it.
So I think if this was a summer blockbuster, you know, this would have been like The Blind Side, and it would have had that big finale at the end. And I actually liked the fact that it was very controlled, and despite the fact that it's got a really solid big cast, it had that very intimate, independent feel about it, which I really, really appreciated. So I'm with Yazdi. I actually liked that it displayed some restraint. And I think it would have almost been cheesy if it had gone the other way. Mm-hmm. But I just, again, for me, it felt like a really good canvas for Al Pacino and Annette Bening and Christopher Plummer to just display what great character work they can do.
I'll disagree with you on Christopher Plummer, but Annette Bening was spectacular here.
Yeah,
I think
she's always good. But
yeah, can we talk about that? I mean, that role.
Yeah, Annette Bening role.
And then we'll talk about Bobby Cannavale, and we can talk about Christopher Plummer as well. But that, I think almost anybody other than Annette Bening would have made a mess out of that role.
Yes.
You know, because that role is a cliche. It's a plot device. If mm-hmm. there ever was
correct.
It's the female love interest yep. for crying out loud who helps him with his redemption. But I think it's in the tone. It's a very fine tone, you know. I believe their relationship, as fake as it was. I mean, I know that Annette Bening does not live at the Hilton in New Jersey, and neither would, you know, Al Pacino. But I actually believed that whatever was going on between them. And I think that's what good actors bring to it. And sometimes it's just good to sit back and watch these good actors do their thing. And speaking of which, I mean, when is Bobby Cannavale's ship going to come in? I mean, he is the ultimate plot device. I mean, I would run, if I was an actor, I was offered that role, I would run 100 miles away from it. His character is what the whole movie pivots on. And I thought he was tremendous in the movie. I mean, he plays things with a lot of delicacy, with a lot of understatedness.
He really got my attention in Blue Jasmine last year. Yeah. He was so good in Blue Jasmine. And again, you know, he delivers.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago. Wow. Yeah. I mean, yeah, but he delivers. I mean, I agree with you. He feels like he's been around for a long time, but I don't think he's been in tons and tons of stuff.
He's been around. He's been in a lot of Martin Scorsese movies doing big parts. He was on Boardwalk Empire on HBO.
Okay.
He's been in a lot of NBC television shows. So he's been, and he's been doing play theater. In
yeah,
New
he's
York
kind of got that
time.
Brad Garrett feel about him.
Yeah, I see why. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why didn't Christopher Plummer work for you?
Yeah.
I just didn't buy who he was trying to be. I didn't buy the hat. I mean, I didn't buy the. You know, he just right. seemed wrong for the role, and I'm not sure who else I would put in his place, but. I wasn't very comfortable with him trying to be this kind of, you know, aging hipster, you know, kind of character, this, you know, slightly cool guy.
I loved it.
Yeah, again.
I didn't, I can totally see now that you're mentioning it, that somebody might see him as an aging hipster, but because that's what he was, but I never
no,
felt
I
that
just
he
thought,
was a hipster.
I thought
until
he was great.
It.
I thought it
no.
was a really understated performance.
In some ways, I this is kind of a really odd thing that, but I kept interchanging him in my head with Morgan Freeman, and thinking that
it's
would
interesting,
have been
yeah.
colorblind.
I know,
weird.
Right? That would have.
No, but I can see why
that physicality and that kind that. Of, you know, cooler old guy would have been much more palatable had it been Morgan Freeman, because I see him more in that way. Christopher Plummer, I don't think of him as cool, and he didn't quite inhabit the role in the way that I think he could have. Anyway, just
yeah
we all perceive things differently.
Okay, anything more? wrap this one up. Yazdi, you go first.
This is my kind of film. I call me schmaltzy. I've said this before, but I think when a movie is done right, it can really play you like a piano. And this movie played me like a piano at many times. I had tears running down my eyes at several points in the movie. It just worked with me. And again, it doesn't break any new ground whatsoever. But the movie has its heart in the right place. And, you know, how often do you get to see Annette Bening do something fun, and how often do you get to see Jennifer Garner do something fun? And even though, like I said, Al Pacino doesn't do much for me, there's something very likable about the movie. There's something very, it comes from a good place. And I would recommend this movie to absolutely anyone. 8 out of 10.
Joe?
This will probably surprise you given my comment, because I think my comments have made it sound like I didn't get that much out of the movie. But I'm going to give this a 7. And as I say that, because the movie was kind of overall enjoyable, but you know, it was distinctly average in a way that's inoffensive and friendly, you know. And I think anyone going to see this, as Yazdi said, will come out having felt that they got, you know, reasonable bang for buck. So 7 out of 10.
I think this is a little gem. It's not amazing, but it's really good. I think 7 out of 10.
Yeah. I mean, the greatest praise I can give the movie is I actually at one point felt I didn't want the movie to end.
Oh.
Like, you know, 10 minutes before, I was like, oh, this movie's going to end sometime soon. And I want to feel, I want to continue feeling as good as I am while I'm watching it. But that's me, you know.
I'm surprised you didn't say the biggest accolade I could give this movie is it's not Get Hard.
Oh, God. Give me 100 Danny Collins over one Get Hard. But anyway.
I'm still shocked.
Yes, this is going to be a good debate.
Oh, my God.
Okay, mail at movieballers.com. Let us know what you think of these movies, in particular Get Hard. Head over to wrangle.com. I think we're definitely going to do a Get Hard wrangle. So, check us out on wrangle.com. And again, thanks to the lovely people at wrangle.com for their support of Movieballers. You can access us Facebook.moviewallers and twitter.com/moviewallers. So until our next episode, I'm gonna say goodnight from me.
And me.
And me as well.